This is CliffCentral.com.
It's time for the burning platform. This is probably the only reason some people check in with us every Thursday. They don't come for me or for Sia. They come for Justice Malala, and he's sitting opposite me now. How are you, Justice?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm very pleased to also say that despite your 1 liter of gin, Ben's here today.
He looks very happy, I must say.
Yeah. Well, a slippery slope, because I've been hungover for like 5 of the last 7 days.
So Ben got a liter of gin from Justice last week for no explicable reason. We all got a present.
Get a bit of Nando's son and it'll all go away.
Well, look, I've only got 2 bottles of booze from you and she's not here.
No, that tells you the whole story. So, Justice, are you well?
I'm good.
Good.
Another political week, huh?
When is it quiet?
I actually had exactly that thought on Monday as I was away for the weekend and then driving back into Joburg. I arrived home, I sort of settled down. And boom, about 4:35, Winnie Mandela's death is announced. And and suddenly it's a roller coaster. It's controversy, it's remembrance, it's all sorts of things going on. It got me thinking a lot about legacy and what we leave behind.
And it also got me thinking about how we've got to be careful in the moment to let people feel and to create a space for them to feel and to understand that without having to jump in with, you know, trying to be objective or historical in that moment. Because for a lot of people, everything's just emotional, and you can understand that. I mean, I've got to correct something from last Thursday where we were talking about this Vicky Momberg situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watched the video over the weekend last weekend.
Yeah.
And that was it. I just spent maybe 10 minutes thinking about it, but it suddenly gave me pause to reflect. And I said to Ben and Sia this morning, this is a thoroughly unpleasant human being. Forget about everything else.
I know.
Let's just for a moment imagine what it would be like to be on a desert island with someone like
especially if
she thinks she's superior to you in some way, which clearly she thinks about a lot of people in this country.
Yes.
I just am horrified that someone would, given an opportunity to behave themselves in a situation where the police were trying time and time again. I mean, the number of times that officer tried to help her solve her problems and she was so rude and so abusive and so revolting. I'm just appalled at the inhumanity of it. Forget the racism. That's a whole other reason to be appalled. But I'm just so disappointed that there are people like this among us.
It's not just that. It's
I mean, psychopathy.
I think actually it's the word you use. It's where's the human in this?
This is an antisocial psychopath, first and foremost, and then a racist as well, which doubles the problem. But, you know, I would love to live in a place where we could just treat each other with a little more decorum.
Yeah.
That's
but
all.
I think, you know, with particularly her case, you look at what she did, and then she did afterwards. You know, the Sunday Times ran more
It didn't get better.
It didn't get better. It just gets worse.
She apparently drove around for like an hour after that, phoning and abusing people.
Yeah, yeah. So there are four phone calls.
There's something very wrong with this. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I think there's something very, very unstable about someone who behaves like this. And all of that, notwithstanding the fact that she had this experience where she'd been mugged or hijacked or whatever, I'm not to diminish that in any way, because a lot of people in this country go through that kind of trauma all the time, and most of them don't behave like she did. And it's something to think about. By no means am I going to deliver comment on her sentencing, whether or not we should ever be sent to jail for things we say, but if you can't behave yourself in society and you're so antisocial and you're just so full of anger and hatred, I don't know that the world is going to be a great place for you, no matter what happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I think the one thing about history and confronting history is to be able to look it in the face, look it in the eye, and say, this was us, humanity, in whatever form, whether it's Nazism or it's other horrific acts that have happened in the past, and say, this is who we were, and this is how we make sure it doesn't happen again.
And let's aspire to a little more.
To a little more, exactly. Yeah. And so for me, the Vicky Mombergs of this world are pretty much not just the personal. You know, there are very many nasty people in the world. You walk into a bar and you realize just how many nasty people there are. But it's being able to, together with your fellow human beings, your fellow citizens, being able to realize that that part of our history was horrific, and we're gonna find ways to put it aside, put it away, and never go back to being so horrific ever again. And when you hear that tape, and for me, one of the key aspects of the case is her treatment of the social worker who was trying to help her. Forget about the policeman, forget about the call center people, forget all about the four calls that you made. This is someone who says, okay, this is how we work through this thing, and then, you know, you'll get your non-custodial sentence. And this person has to leave. That's how bad this Vicky Mombergs is. So it's that. But
I thought it would be worth, because we did dwell on this a little bit last week, and we prevaricated a little bit about whether or not we thought it was a good idea to sentence someone. But still, having let the dust settle and reading a little bit more and listening to a little bit more, I just felt it needed a revisit.
No, absolutely.
There's more important stuff going on in the world, believe it or not. So this is interesting, Justice. South Africa is the most unequal country in the world.
Yeah. I speak a lot.
Is this the Gini coefficient thing?
Yes, it's a similar measure, but this was done by
the World Bank.
The World Bank, and it looks at our society. And I think for me, it's not we bendy this about all the time, that, you know, Gini coefficient shows that we are one of the two most unequal societies in the world. I think it's worthwhile to be reminded. Because I think one of the things that has happened in the past 10 years is that we stopped trying to find solutions to that problem. We became worse on every point. So those who are rich became richer. Those who are poor became poorer. Unemployment went up. Mm-hmm. Poverty from 2011, according to the United Nations, from 2011, our poverty, which had been reducing, that means that people living on very little a day, we had been
gouging them even more.
Exactly. Now, it's going up. More and more people are becoming poorer and poorer every day.
All right. Is this linear? In other words, since 1994, has this gap widened, and has it widened consistently, or was there a point in the last 25 years where we started going the other way?
Yes. So under apartheid, we were this way. 1994 to 1999, Nelson Mandela couldn't break it. People were getting poorer. From 2001... the economy began to turn. More people got into jobs. So we were at 27% unemployment in 1994. In the 2000s, we went to 20% unemployment. More people got jobs.
This is the first 2 years of Thabo Mbeki.
The first 2 years of Thabo Mbeki.
Trevor Manuel
and those guys. And then 2004 kept on getting better, through to 2008.
Yeah.
The United Nations measures poverty, and it said you were very poor. But in those 6 years, up to 2011, people who were poor were becoming less and less in our society. So people, you start off being very poor, and then you get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not so poor anymore, because you're no longer living on less than 15 rand a day. You're living on slightly more than that, and so you move class, essentially, from extreme absolute poverty to just a little bit better, and maybe better, and maybe better, and maybe you become working class, middle class, whatever. So we were doing so in the past 24 years. It was under Thabo Mbeki from 2005 to 2008. Jacob Zuma came in 2009, and then we started going bad again. So all those measures that you use to see whether people are poor or not and so forth started getting worse instead of continuing to get better. This is where the problem happened. It was under Jacob Zuma, and I don't want to say this, but we became poorer under Jacob Zuma. And so when people become poorer, now you can talk about, oh no, you know, Ben and Sia and Justice are getting richer and richer and richer. But a smaller number of people are getting richer and richer and richer. Not a bigger number of people are getting richer.
Well, it would be fine if the rich were getting rich and the poor were getting better.
Exactly.
Then no one would have any complaints.
No, no.
But it would be way better. Let's just explain to everybody why the Gini coefficient or this new World Bank survey is important. Because, I mean, there is an element of human nature, which is that we want to be unequal. You know, you want to be able to send your kids to a certain school. You want to be able to afford private health care. You don't want to be the same as everybody. That's why we strive. That's why we kind of try to excel or be good at what we're doing so we can earn more money, etc. But if your Gini coefficient's too wide, it makes an unstable society.
Exactly.
And you have the potential for revolution.
It makes us and them. That's what it does. Mm-hmm. And the more glaring those inequalities, the more the society and those marginalized, those on the outside of that wealth, believe that, well, actually the system doesn't work because it works for the few.
And I've got nothing to lose.
I have absolutely nothing to lose.
And those are people who will do anything.
So if you think about what was called the Arab Spring and in Tunisia, where the first outbreaks of rioting and so forth started. Mm-hmm. You had a street seller, a hawker, whose wares were taken by the army, thrown on the street, and he set himself alight because he felt there is nothing for me here. This system is for them and not us. And, you know, in the aftermath, we can say whatever we can say about the Gini coefficient. But the key thing is you cannot afford to have so many people saying this system is not for us. And we need, therefore, in these days of optimism about, you know, the new Ramaphosa administration, to refocus, I think, to say, how do you get to a point where all of us are getting a little bit more prosperous, but particularly that massive chunk of people who've fallen into poverty start to believe that, as Thabo Mbeki once put it, tomorrow will be better than today. Because for a long time, in fact, for the past 7 years, since 2011, there are a lot of people who sit there and say, tomorrow is going to get worse, and the day after is going to be worse, and so forth and so forth. So I think it's absolutely pivotal that these kinds of numbers drive policy and drive.
And we've done it before. We were able to reverse this trend.
We were.
Now Thabo Mbeki managed to reverse that trend, which means that we can't say that the ANC can't do this, because there was some ANC that could.
Yes.
And we can't say that it's an African thing either, because there are other countries with enormous growth rates right on our borders.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk in a moment about Botswana. But I see, and I can't resist the temptation to since we're talking about Thabo Mbeki, just discuss the heat that he's come under this week.
Yes.
Because in the wake of Winnie Madikizela Mandela's death, and he didn't really have a great relationship with her, there was that horrible footage of him kind of swatting her out of the way at that rally, which didn't go down well at the time. And this is a long time ago, but people remember.
Yeah.
And Thabo Mbeki said, well, all he'd like to see is an objective, or at least an attempt by our media to be balanced about someone's legacy. We, of course, are giving her a special official funeral, and she's a woman of tremendous impact in society. But the amount of abuse that he's got.
I wasn't quite as taken aback as all that. I think the way Winnie Madikizela Mandela will be remembered is something that, or is being remembered, it's a very challenging process. I agree with you when we started off and you said, you know, maybe it's time to stop and just let people feel. But the reality is that with Winnie Madikizela Mandela, she wasn't someone who let it be. And events around her life, around how we remember her, are not letting things be. So to even say an objective remembrance of Winnie Madikizela Mandela is controversial in itself, because I'll tell you now, there will be someone on Twitter saying, yeah, what do you mean objective? Are you saying the way we or some people are remembering her is not objective, that you want to insert, as Nomvula Mukonyane said, a certain narrative? For me, it's the unformedness of even the mass democratic movement itself. Mm. Because, and you know, the elephant in the room is the name Stompie Sibe. Stompie Sibe is the 13, 14-year-old activist who died at the hands of what was called the Nelson Mandela Football Club in the late 1980s. Now, if you go back to that time, it was in 1989, it was Mefimo Robe, who was a leader of the ANC, was the spokesperson of the UDF. It was Cyril Ramaphosa. It was Vali Musa. It was Sister Bernard Ngube. These were the great and the good who issued a statement and said the mass democratic movement, that means that COSATU, UDF, organizations across the country, said they distance herself from Winnie Mandela. Thabo Mbeki said in these interviews this week that, well, it was the ANC in exile which sent a directive to Winnie Mandela and said, you know, you need to disband this football club. So the minute you talk about that, Nomvula Mukonyane says, yes, this was the apartheid regime and its communications framework, its underhandedness.
And some people have been saying that George Bizos was one of the people who thought that there was actually a conspiracy against Winnie, that she didn't have any hand at all in Stompie's death, and any of that stuff is just made up by conspiracy theorists.
Yes, he was the lead counsel. So there were three lawyers who represented her. It was George Bizos who led, Dikgang Moseneke, the former deputy chief justice. There was a third, I can't remember who it was now. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, Dikgang Moseneke has come out and said he didn't believe that she had a hand in it. Mm-hmm. Remember, she was convicted of this and in the 90s. Remember that she did go to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and spoke about this. But what I'm trying to get at is there was no way that Winnie Mandela would be remembered in a straight line. Perhaps you've given us the biggest lesson. Maybe it's time to just feel and let people feel. Because I'll tell you this, this discussion that we're having is one that certainly on social media is, no, you can't. Someone used the word complex in describing Winnie Madikizela Mandela. And then someone said, yeah, now you're describing her as complex. And that is just discriminatory because she's a woman, because she's...
Yeah, I put up a tribute. My line was, condolences to the family. She lived a controversial life, which is, I don't think, something controversial to say, but made huge impact. Mm. Rest in peace. And then I got people saying things you could not believe, so I just took it down eventually. Yeah. I realized, like, what am I doing on Twitter? This is a stupid place to be. And if I wanted to make a tribute to Winnie, I'd do it quietly in the privacy of my own home. So that's what I'm going to do from now on.
But I want to... Where's that going to end up when you pull stuff from Twitter And the next day, Sia stands up and says something about other people, about, and then I go for him and I attack and he pulls it down. I find those people who've been putting up pictures of Stompie-Seipe saying Winnie's going to burn in hell and all this, I find it so distasteful, so disgusting. On the other hand, I think I have a disquiet about all of us having to pay tribute to Winnie Mandela the way Julius Malema pays tribute to her.
Like a sanitization and an unqualified...
Exactly.
It's a beatification.
Yes. And there is something just that doesn't sit right with me with the way we... It has to be... She wasn't a one-narrative person. There were so many narratives. She was a woman. She was a freedom fighter. She was a stylista, if you like fashion. She was so many things, you know.
I feel bad for her that Batabile Dlamini got to make a tribute to her the other day. I mean, there's... someone talk about wasting a legacy.
I think, you know, that's enough said.
Yeah. Let's also look, because there's so much in the news.
We've been told she's the new mother of the nation. If Winnie's now gone, that means Batabile is the remaining mother of the nation.
I love the there's some tweets and some memes going around saying, if you are born after 1994, yeah, stop going banging on about our mother of the nation. You've got Batabile. What's I'm sorry.
Batabile. All right. The president, Cyril Ramaphosa, has expressed concern about Malusi Gigaba violating the constitution by lying under oath. Well, that's a good move.
That's a very good
move. We'd be pleased if our president admitted at least concern about one of his cabinet ministers lying.
Yes. I wanted to talk about that because there are two things. In parliament, MPs are jumping up and down about our good friend Faith Mutambi, saying, you know, from the Gupta leaks and other information, we know that she sent cabinet documents to the Guptas after cabinet meetings.
Yes.
So can we just take a moment here? This is a member of your cabinet. She gets secret documents in cabinet to discuss with the cabinet colleagues. Immediately afterwards, she sends them off to the Gupta, saying, Ashu Chawla, who was the Gupta top honcho, here are the documents we discussed in cabinet today. Thank you very much.
I mean, isn't that treasonous? It's unethical. If you're in a board of a small business with 50 employees and you do that, you're fired.
Yeah, but immediately.
Fired. I mean, it's fiduciary duty, the responsibility, the competitions stuff, the fact that you have a, what's the word? You have like a duty to keep it...
It's
in confidence,
yes,
right? And a cabinet meeting is like the highest state body when it comes to deciding what policies are going to be implemented. It could have to do with state security,
exactly,
things that could compromise the country in a tremendously brutal way. You'd be fired anywhere else. But Faith Mutambi did this, and she sent them to the consigliere of the Guptas.
Yeah. So there's her sitting there. She's still a member of parliament. She still speaks. She has the audacity to speak in parliament. I mean, I'd be hiding, guys. I would just not show my face anywhere in the streets of South Africa. So,
sure.
So MPs are up in arms saying, no, we can't. And these are ANC MPs saying, we think there should be action taken against them. In the case of Malusi Gigaba, the judges, one judge after the other, has thrown out his appeal saying, I'm sorry, Baba, you lied under oath, saying that you did not give the Oppenheimers the right to operate this private terminal at OR Tambo. when you had given it. Then you withdrew it because the Guptas said, no, we want it ourselves. This is on the record that the man lied. A judge has said so. So he broke his word in an affidavit to a judge. So can you trust a man like that? For me, it's...
Jacob Zuma thought we could trust him with the keys to the treasury.
The thing about all the Gupta and Zupta stooges is that slowly, slowly, it's coming back. Think about Faith Mutambi. ANC MPs want her to be charged, to be kicked out, to face a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
Malusi Gigaba, Cyril is now sitting there saying, "Aye, Baba, I'm going to be forced to act because, you know, the renewal will need me to act. The judge has said you lied." And then, you know, you appealed and the judge said you lied in court. Mm-hmm. So, you know, think about Ace Magashule. Last week there was some scandal about 150 million rand housing in which his daughter got the tender.
There's a new scandal that he was going to open a Winnie Mandela museum at the house in Brandfort.
Yes.
And people have been driving past taking pictures. It's a derelict ruin.
And this is a man.
And it's got a sign outside saying the Mandela Museum.
I had to laugh yesterday. I laughed, but I was crying because this is a man who is at Winnie Mandela's house and he says, we are going to ask respectfully that the media mustn't focus on the negative about Winnie Mandela. We must focus on the positive. They're asking him, but what about the house that she spent her
was exile, banished. Basically. Yeah. It was her
she
exile.
She was exiled to Brandfort, a windswept semi-desert. Then you have done nothing about this place. And money was paid. It's not like, no, you haven't done anything. It's the money was paid. Millions were paid to his administration. And what did he do? No, not a brick. Not a single brick put up at that house. And he says, no, let's not focus on that. It's negative. So we must say, oh, it's Magashule, well done. Oh, my word. It's quite something. Anyway, so all of them. Slowly, 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 it's all coming back, huh? And you're going to see more action. You're going to see gangani gangani, as they say in Zulu. Slowly, slowly, people are just gonna fall over like this, one by one, one by one. So it's coming, and I can see it. I can see it. So that's Malusi Gigaba for you.
Last week, the DA and ANC MPs agreed about Faith Mutambi. We've spoken about that. But is there any progress on that Ethel Trollope situation in Nelson Mandela Bay? Because we thought that he was going to be fired.
No. Yes, sir. We did say it looks like the plan was falling apart. Remember that?
Yes, you did. That's correct.
Gayton McKenzie's party, Patriotic Alliance, has one guy in that council. But he was... it was... 60-60. And the Gayton McKenzie's Patriotic Alliance took their one guy and he went in. The DA said, you're going to be the MMC for Roads and Transport, my son. And he said, yes, I'm in. And suddenly he had 61-59. And the EFF, thinking that it had the ANC, the UDM, that they were going to make it 61 themselves, suddenly didn't have it.
But then it descended into chaos.
It's only going to happen again on the 14th, not the 14th, that's Winnie Mandela's funeral. But it was 14 days from last Thursday. But the key thing there is that Julius Malema went around the country telling all of us that he was going to cut the throat of whiteness. Mm-hmm. That it was so nice for him to see that a black child is holding the future of the white man, Ethel Trollope, in his hands. Can I just say, Ethel Trollope is still the mayor of Nelson Mandela Bay today. And I think when we eulogize Julius Malema and how astute he is, he didn't know how to play politics. He made a lot of noise. He traveled down to Nelson Mandela Bay, but the DA outsmarted him because they looked at the numbers. They said there are 120 people in here. We need one to switch. And they went for Gayton McKenzie, and Gayton McKenzie brought in his guy, and they had the majority.
So he's not the political genius some people thought he was.
And he still hasn't spoken to the AIC. And the AIC, you'll remember, is that ANC-looking Matatiele.
That's all they want is Matatiele.
They just want Matatiele. But those guys are saying the ANC hasn't done anything for us, and it's been years now. So we're going to give the DA a vote. So, in fact, they have three votes in that council. And the DA may end up with a little bit more, votes than they thought. So if there's any lesson here, is that if you're a political leader, before you open your mouth and say, "Yeah, look how I'm gonna win,"
make sure you can deliver.
Make sure you can deliver, because the ANC had Figile Mbalula there. Julius Malema and his leadership went there. The UDM's Bantu Holomisa went there, and they thought they're going to get rid of the DA. But they didn't do the hard work on the ground. And they got outplayed and outsmarted. And maybe next week when it goes to the vote, they will be outplayed and outsmarted again. It doesn't look good for them. You can talk and talk and talk, but where's the delivery? The ANC is not in charge in Nelson Mandela Bay now.
You know, so much of our conversations on the Burning Platform tend to be about local politics, and then we occasionally go international. It's usually to Russia or to Europe or to America, and occasionally to South America, but we don't look just north of our own border.
Yeah.
And there's some fascinating stuff going on there. I actually heard two guys in the gym on Tuesday talking about Botswana. And it's coincidental that this is something you wanted to talk about. Yeah. They were both saying that there are more public hospitals in Gaborone than there are private, and that they're as good.
Wow.
They were saying that there are public schools that are doing as well as the private schools, and that people really have a 50-50 decision to make when it comes to private or public education. And they were both saying, these two guys, I was sort of eavesdropping, they were both saying, why is it that they can get that right in Botswana and we can't?
In Botswana, they made tough choices. You'll remember that Botswana was one of the poorest countries on the face of the earth. They discovered diamonds.
Right.
They went into a joint venture with business. Dapswana was born, De Beers Botswana. And the Botswana money was used to develop the people of Botswana. So for the past 35 years, Botswana has grown year on year 7%. As its population has grown, so has its commitment to its people. They've had peace. They've had peaceful handover of power from the very what was his name? The Ian Khama to from Seretse Khama to Masire to several others to Ian Khama now.
Festus Morai.
You know, all of them just, I've done my 10 years, I'm moving on. The next guy comes in, runs the country, and moves on. They've just had a new president, Mokgweetsi Masisi, taking over from Ian Khama, and he says, "I'm going to focus now on the youth." They have 18% unemployment in Botswana, so not too far behind from us, but very respectable compared to us. We are on 27%, so we shouldn't even. They are 10% below us, 9% below us. So for me, Botswana works because it doesn't fluff about with, oh, you know, we're going to, if you want to go to Botswana and start a business, they open your arms. their arms for you and say, do this. If you want to go to Botswana and go on safari or go to the amazing, gorgeous, to Maun, for example, or to the Okavango Delta, they say, please come.
They don't make you bring your children's unabridged birth certificates.
No, they say, come to the border, let's check your passport, let's get your biometrics at the border, and then you're in.
And
that has worked for Botswana. That continues to work for Botswana. In South Africa, we make it hard. We make it very hard for people to come here. I don't know, I'm still seething from a story 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, as I met a bunch of MBA students from the United States. One of them told me he is a millionaire, multimillionaire, who has lived in the United States forever. He was born in India. He works in Silicon Valley for one of the tech giants, Facebook and all of those. And he was coming here doing his MBA stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we South Africans made him apply for his visa, and then we asked him to come from San Francisco, fly to Los Angeles to get his thumb, his thumbprint taken at the consulate, and then he had to go back and wait. And then after a few weeks, the visa arrives in his passport. Then he can fly to South Africa. So he made two flights
just to get the right to fly here.
And you sit there and you say, and he said to me, if I was coming on holiday, if anyone asked me to fly, first to fly to LA to go and get the visa and then come back, and wait, and that I've never have come here. It's just that I wanted to come here to, you know, to do stuff at Wits and UCT with professors there. But we make it so hard to come and do business and to come and
this
enjoy
again is Malusi Gigaba. And
thank you very much.
And he's back in that seat now.
Yeah, he's back in that seat now. Oh man,
it's Groundhog Day.
Anyway,
all right. So I mean, the point is to maybe take a few lessons out of Botswana's book, because we always tend to look at, you know, established democracies overseas, and we tend to look at ideological equals, and actually the country we should be looking at is the one geographically closest to us that seems to be getting a lot right.
They get it right.
So much to talk about justice. This is barely scratching the surface, but thank you for your time this morning.
No, please, can we just talk about one other thing? Yes.
Yeah. You want to talk about Gedleyihlekisi?
Gedleyihlekisi. I mean, what did the show be without Gedleyihlekisi?
We thought
you want to talk about. Is Friday the big day in court? Because I saw the Andile Mritama.
Oh, God.
I don't know how this guy manages to still get attention. Like, who still believes he's got a credible thing to say when we know he was paid by the Guptas?
I know.
Somehow he ends up on TV. What is this guy? He says he's going to pitch up on Friday with busloads of people to support Jacob Zuma at the Durban High Court.
Well, if Jacob Zuma survives these charges and remains influential in the ANC, then the likes of Andile Mritama remain in the warm bosom of the Gupta family, and they can keep on getting some cash out of whatever business is still around.
So it's a continuation.
Okay. So if Jacob Zuma goes, then the kingpin, the main beneficiary of the Gupta empire, is gone, and the little minion like Mritama are in big trouble.
This is a survival strategy.
So it's a meeting of the gang members trying to shore up their positions. But Gedleyihlekisi is in court tomorrow. 16 charges, 783 counts. Mm. 780. So it means, Sia, you're sitting next to me. It means someone was giving him cash 783 times. They gave him money.
And those are the ones we know about.
Yes. So it's like I come in and I say, hey, Sia, you know, let me tell you this.
Just on a balance of probabilities, 783, even if he could prove 782 of them were legit, They can still get him on one.
You see, I want to put this in perspective. There are 365 days in a year.
Oh my goodness.
It means you will have to spend 2 years with me, giving me cash every day.
That's just incredible.
This guy's prolific. You know, he was taking cash like nobody's business. So anyway, Gelehlekisa's defense is that, sure, I took the money, but I didn't know that this guy wanted me to do bad things. I just thought he was giving me cash.
Oh, sure, because, you know, we all offer each other tons and tons of cash.
Exactly. I'd
love to live in that world.
783 times.
Justice, how much do you want today?
Just give me money once for today. I'll come in tomorrow. Maybe I'll take twice tomorrow. Anyway, so finally, after years and years, in fact, after more than 10 years, Jacob Zuma is appearing in court. He's in Durban. And the key political issue is that the ANC said 2 weeks ago, no ANC member must go and support Jacob Zuma in ANC colors. You go and do it, but you go as, Gareth is here to support Gelehlekisa.
In your private capacity.
Yes. Yeah, so you know, Gareth gets on the bus with Andile overnight.
Have you read my emails?
He's in the bus, but he can't wear an ANC shirt, okay? Mm-hmm. He's got to wear his own...
BLF.
BLF. Yeah, you can wear BLF, whatever. But so now the problem is that Kebima Patso says he's going. And you can see Kebima Patso, by the way, with the MKMVA, was a beneficiary of the Gupta family.
Sure.
So you can see who's going to this thing. The people who are saying they are going to support Jacob Zuma is the KwaZulu-Natal Funeral Practitioners Association, yes. Ben. You'll love those guys, you know, straight from work, washing their hands, coming to support Jacob Zuma.
I still, to this day, don't see the correlation of where they met and how they worked together. How?
I don't know.
Okay, if you don't know Justice, then we all don't know.
Anyway, they're the big organizers of this thing, and there's all sorts. But you can see what's going on, because the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal had said that it will support him. Now it's saying, no, we will convince the ANC, particularly the ANC Youth League there, saying we'll convince the ANC that actually we need to go support him. So tomorrow you'll see lots of ANC T-shirts there. And that throws the ball in, kicks the ball into Cyril Ramaphosa's court, and it will be, you know, what do you say when...
Well, isn't it the Secretary General? I mean, we always used to refer to Gwede on these matters.
Yes.
Now Gwede's gone to a ministry, and now it's Ace Magashule.
Yes, Ace Magashule, who went to KwaZulu-Natal and said, don't worry, we'll get our ANC back in 5 years' time, has to stand up and actually enforce the ANC's rules. Can he do it? Will he do it? It'll be interesting to see. So... my view is that Jacob Zuma is building up or rebuilding his support base, and he's got support within the ANC.
And remember, he's done this before.
He's done this
before. He took it all the way to the union buildings.
This was exactly what he did in the mid-2000s.
This is when Ranjeni set up the Friends of Jacob Zuma Trust.
Exactly. So what you're seeing now is exactly what you saw with that rape trial. And the kind of mobilization, there's people who are going to sleep outside court tomorrow. They're already making weird noises about the judges and the judiciary not being independent and so forth. We're in for a long fight back by Jacob Zuma, and don't underestimate him. But he doesn't have the power that he had last time round. So... but he's going to fight.
But I see there's this sudden thing where politicians are enjoying flying economy class. and having pictures taken with members of the public, usually really impressed white people, on Kalula and Mango flights. Is this bullshit or is this bullshit?
Cyril Ramaphosa flew Fly Safair.
Yeah, can you believe that? Huh? How's that? What's that been?
I'm doing that tomorrow too.
Well, no one's going to take pictures of you.
Damn it.
But isn't this a trend?
It's a nice little trend. Look, I mean, you need a baby in the picture.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because there's
an
election coming up in just 13 months.
Good point.
15 months.
Amateurs. So, they should have gone with babies.
Yeah. So Cyril had a baby in that picture. He smiled, huge smile. Oh. You need to do those things. You need to do those things. This is how to win an election, Sia.
Mr. Malala, what would you do if you were minding your own business on a flight? Next thing, there comes Gedla Hlekisa and he sits right next to you.
What would you do? Take a selfie?
You know that.
What would you do, Justice? I'm fascinated by that question. Thank you, Sia.
I know that English word. I never know. I know what it means, but I don't actually know what it means. And it's called gobsmacked.
Yeah. So Ben said this morning he probably would not take a selfie with former President Jacob Zuma.
No, I definitely wouldn't. I'd probably be okay with breaking wind in the general public. Oh. To be totally honest with you.
All right.
He's so, breaking wind, you breaking wind.
I would, and I would feel nothing.
Okay, so Ben would break wind. Sia and I probably would take a picture because we'd find it hilarious. Yeah. What would you do?
I would take a picture and then we'd start talking.
And what do you think that conversation would be like? Because he knows your opinions.
Yes. I think it wouldn't be... you know, I like... there was a picture taken, a video clip taken yesterday by a South African guy in Dubai. He sees Ajay Gupta coming out of... there's an embassy, Indian consulate in the building, walks out, and the guy says, Ajay, the country's looking for you. When are you going back to South Africa? And he keeps on saying, the country's looking for you. But one of the things apparently he wrote on his Facebook page or whatever social media he was on, and he writes, you know, in Dubai, you can't just... confront someone and beat them up because they have very strong rules and regulations about that sort of thing.
So at least Jacob Zuma wouldn't be able to do that to you.
No. That's what I like about having laws in this country.
All right,
we have
good.
To ask these questions because they're now plausible.
It's minding very your own plausible. Business.
Exactly.
Wow.
17B, and then here comes someone.
Imagine.
Right next to
I don't know what I would do. I'd start laughing straight away.
I won't name the person, but I got a fly. I never fly business class except for this one.
Sure. I've heard that before.
No, really, I don't. I've never flown business class off my own. But every so often, someone will book me in business class. And I sat next to someone that I had made the loser of the week twice in two consecutive weeks. And she looked at me and I looked at her. I said, hello, Ella. I was so quiet. I didn't have a beer. I didn't have a drink. I buried my face.
How
in
long
my
was the flight?
Book. It was a Cape Town flight.
Two hours. My God, 2 hours of torture. That's when you asked to be swapped out to economy.
Please. I don't say no. It's just you're in 33A right next to the Louis and it's, I'll take it.
All right. Thanks, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Very Cheers, good. Guys.
Justice Malala, The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. Every week, your update on what's going on and what the real story is behind the story behind the story.
This is CliffCentral.com.